Lisa Gibson, age 60. Today's date is November 2nd, 2022. Our location is Las Vegas, Nevada. My interview partner is Dr. Rosemary Henrick. And my relationship to partner is friend.
My name is Dr. Rosemary Henrick. I am 80 years old. Today's date is November 2nd, 2022. We are in Las Vegas, Nevada. The name of the interview partner is Lisa Gibson. Relationship to partner, she is my friend. Now, Lisa, you and I met when you were a caregiver taking care of your father, and I had been assigned to be his primary care provider. And he was covered in the VA home-based primary care program because he was elderly and really no longer able to easily leave your home. And I am wondering, did you always believe you would one day become the full-time caregiver for one of your parents or any of your siblings?
Never, Dr. Rosemary. Never, ever, ever. He always had a story about he was going to the old soldier's home in Mississippi because he could do fly fishing from the porch, and no.
How long did it take you to understand the direction, the situation you were in with him, to know that you were going to become his caregiver?
His illness evolved, and as his illness and age evolved, it was then that not only I, but my sisters and I, we realized that this is going to be a lifetime commitment, and it was something that we had committed to. There was no beginning or end, because as he got older, we just realized that this is what we're going to be doing.
Did you feel you had a choice in the matter?
I didn't want. There was never any question about a choice. It was what I wanted to do.
How did you prepare for the challenge of bringing him to your home?
Oh, my goodness. So Dr. Rosemary, he had went into the hospital, and as this hospital situation goes, he was in Louisiana at the hospital where he worked. So he had the surgery that didn't go well. From the surgery, from ICU, he went to the regular floor. I think it's called post-care, or he went to the floor. From there, he stayed there, and then he actually went into a nursing home. From the nursing home, the way that his VA benefits and Medicare is, you only have a certain amount of time. So at that time, we had been there for 5.5 months. So the day we moved out of the nursing home was the day that his Medicare benefits they subsided. I had to come back to work at the library. So I told him, we're going home. We're going to go to Las Vegas. Come and see if you like it. And then I did things like ordered wheelchairs, but it was just the conversation that we had.
Now, I think you minimized the fact that you spent 5.5 months out of your life before the situation ever became a one-on-one with your father. And that time was spent in Louisiana, but you still really lived in Las Vegas, Nevada.
So I work for the Las Vegas Clark County Library District, and through a wonderful supervisor and through FMLA and through accrued sick time, I had that much time. And so I literally was able to go back and forth. I was able to work with our benefits department, and literally I lived at his home. I lived at the hospital. A lot of the nurses would like save an extra bed, and I would just like camp out in his room or sleep in his truck or just live with some relatives and family. In some cases, I would like go and grab the nursing home t-shirt and put it on, and oh, I had such fun. Dr. Rosemary, I had so much fun.
Well, you see it as a lot of fun, but it really, underneath it all, you were taken care of. You were there because of someone you loved, and mm-hmm. you were watching a big change in him.
Yes.
Now, do you think it was harder for you when you brought him home because you were still working? Do you think that would compare differently if you didn't have a job when you brought him home?
Yes. Once we got to Las Vegas, we checked into the Golden Nugget, and we lived there for 3 weeks. So it wasn't real in the sense that we went home and got the hospital. But no, we went straight to the Golden Nugget. I was able to put him in wheelchairs. We had breakfast at the buffet. And then after that, my sister came and she stayed at the Golden Nugget with us. I would catch a cab and go around the corner to work. And then they would stay together. And so it just really became it was always fun. It wasn't, we tried to, oh my goodness, I had to go, I found all the medical supply stores. They tried to give me enough medicine before I left. I found all the medical supply stores here in Las Vegas. I made great friends, like I always do, and just talking to people. And it worked out. It really worked out until we found the place across the street from the hospital, and we moved in there.
I think, I know because I was your father's provider, mm-hmm. He had extraordinary medical needs. He had extraordinary personal mm-hmm. care needs. Mm-hmm. And they would have been, meeting those needs would have been something that probably would have turned away many wives or children or other family members. But you never complained. You just learned exactly what you needed to do and did it because I've watched you. Now, do you think you ever had an idea in your mind how long this role would go on?
Not at all. And let me just back up and say the VA was amazing because there's no way that we as a family could have did this. Just the insurances and the hospitalizations, the bills were phenomenal. But because of his service as a veteran and because of your program was just specifically for veterans over 90. I mean, I couldn't have did it without the resources and the help of the people at the hospital. And no, I didn't have any idea, but we didn't look at it that way, you know?
Did your family help you much?
Oh, yes. Eventually, everyone either moved back here. My sister who works in Missouri, as you know, Monica, she moved back from Missouri. Samia moved back from Georgia with her baby. And then Santi ended up coming back from Florida. You know, there was a hurricane and her house washed away. And then Mia was here on Thanksgiving and then she just saw how busy and hard it was. So she just stayed here and because she worked remotely, she just stayed in the house with us. And Monica's situation was such that she just had to be here because it was Dad, you know, so everyone pulled together.
How did that make you feel?
Oh, it was so fun. It was fun. He thought we were ridiculous, and so did we. Every day was fun, and, you know, there were hard times, but mostly just a lot of laughter, if he could do it.
What do you think is the most important quality a caregiver brings to a situation like yours?
You have to be selfless. You cannot get up in the morning, put on your hair and makeup, and sit and have your coffee. No, no, no. You hit the floor running with, especially if you're working, you hit the floor running with breakfast and meds. You clean the house. You don't clean the house. Breakfast and meds, you get the person up, make sure they're up and dry and happy. And before you even start all that movement, you have to go in and say, hey, how'd you sleep? How are you doing? We're going to make it today. Who's on Let's Make a Deal? What are we doing? So just to kind of give him that opportunity. I don't like Chase. I'm going to go fuss at Chase, or I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to go do that. So just to always to be there and to let him have the opportunity to say what his day was like first, kind of set the tone for what else we're going to do.
Do you think that the healthcare team, you mentioned the VA home-based primary care team, but I know there were other personnel at the VA Medical Center that were helpful. Did you feel they were helpful?
I have made so many good friends, the people in the pharmacy, the people down in enrollment, even the volunteers. They would see me, they would see us roll up in the red car, and the VA here in North Las Vegas has valet now. Other areas, no other hospital that I've been to has an actual valet. So they know, they always knew to just, to, you know, it was us. Mr. Gibson, how are you doing? Always just great services from the volunteers to the pharmacy. Everyone, everyone was top notch, even the cafeteria workers.
How would you have a healthcare team expand? Which ways could they help you more, Lisa?
That is a hard question that I hadn't thought about, because towards the end, there was the whole pandemic. So you can't judge and say, how could, you know, how could you have done things differently? Because the world, as we all think back and go, how could, we still don't know what we could have done differently. So to answer that question, Dr. Rosemary, I think I would have to think about that, but nothing at this point that could have been done.
Now, I know that your father has died. How long ago was that, Lisa?
He passed away on January 31st.
January 31st this
mm-hmm.
year?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Were you alone with him when he died?
Yes.
What did you think about after he died?
It was, I had to do, first of all, I called 911 because I was like, wake up, wake up. I opened up, his eyes were closed because he said, his eyes were closed. I tried to open his eyes, and they didn't look like he was sleeping. He didn't look right. So I immediately called 911. They told me to pull him out of his chair and pull him down, begin the chest compressions, and, you know, following the protocol that 911 has you to do until someone arrives. But it was just like, I am not about to be alone. Wake up. Wake up. We had come so far through so many diseases, and we always sprung back. We always bounced back, Dr. Rosemary.
Could you have done more to prepare yourself for that moment that when he died?
Yes, I could have faced it. I never faced it. Nah, Mr. Gibson wasn't going anywhere. He's so tough. So I never, he'll be here. We got a birthday, we got Christmas, we got to do this, we got to do that.
So when you go back to the question I asked you about how long you thought the situation would go on, mm-hmm. You never thought about that at all?
No.
Did you talk to him about what he wanted when he died?
So Mr. Gibson, a veteran, he carried around that little bitty laminated piece of paper, and he made me laminate this little bitty newspaper article that said, when a veteran passes away, you call this number.
So
so he said that when he passes away, you call this number.
So you called that number.
No, I did not.
You didn't?
It's in his wallet. It's still there. No, I followed the procedure because you and I had kind of like talked about it, and we had, at some point, I had signed like the medical power, you know, little things as they came along, I did, but no, I'm not going to call it away. I didn't know. So
how did you eventually see to it that he was buried?
So after the Las Vegas Fire and Rescue came, I started calling my sisters and my daughters, and then they showed up, and then the coroner came, and the coroner's really nice lady came, and she was so kind, and she gave me all of the information, and she kind of said, step by step, this is what you do. She, you know, did everything. It happened at 5 o'clock in the morning, so that by 6:30 or 7, we were wrapping things up. The coroner came, and they took him away. And then by that time, Santi and me and those guys were there. But she left me a like a folder, and then she also gave me a, it's a victims advocate program. They talked to me on the phone too until somebody showed up. So there was like a whole process, and it just, everyone was so kind in Clark County, and everyone just, there was like a whole process that they go through.
So there, Clark County had all that set up.
Yes, through the coroner. She had the path.
When did you call your family?
Right after it happened. Right after it happened. I said, you guys get over here. The ones that live here. I called my niece in New York. I called just, you know, the regular family. But there are still family members that, older family members that I have to reach. And I have trepidation about that because they're older, and he was always very sad when one of his friends, oh, so sad, when his friend or a relative passed away. So doing StoryCorps is a way to kind of memorialize his life and to let people know that he was buried in Arlington and things are well. I know that's not on your list. I'm sorry.
So he's buried at Arlington.
Yes. July 14th, this past July, 15 of us went, and he was buried with full honors.
That must have been very moving ceremony for you.
It was. We didn't expect it in so many different ways. We all decided to dress up. There was huge grass, so everyone had to take their shoes off. It, in that respect, because you know us, Dr. Rosemary. But on the other hand, it was very military. It was on time. It was spotless clean. It was just everything that a military, everything that he would have wanted. Where Mr. Gibson is at, he's between Larry and Harvey. Those are the people next to him. His place of rest is on a hill. So directly in front of us, you see the Pentagon. To the left and the right is the Air Force flight path. So the planes were going overhead. A little bit over to the right is the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And right behind that is where, if I'm not mistaken, is where Joe Lewis is. There could not be a better place for him to be.
So that made your family and you very happy?
We were excited. We were jumping up and down. Kind of, yeah.
Now, after somebody dies that someone's been taking care of, how many years did you take care of him, Lisa?
10 years.
10 years. Mm-hmm. See, you tend to minimize everything, and that has been your way. And I know that, and mm-hmm. that's why I wanted to clarify that your other life, your, mm-hmm. I know you don't want me to say selfless life, went on for that long, mm-hmm. which is a very long time. Do you believe caregivers like yourself need special help when someone like that dies?
I do. I know that. Things like grief counseling, there is so much, not just for me, but like for the other caregivers, because not only did I have my siblings towards the end, as you know, Dr. Rosemary, there was just an in and out of caregivers that we had. And even now they call and check on me and they say, I just miss Mr. Gibson today. So there's support for the family and then support for the caregiver too. Because even though they weren't a part of the family, they really were a part of our family. They knew where everything was, all the medicine, all the socks he liked, the shoes he didn't like, the jackets, the hat that had to match the jacket. They were just a part of his life every day.
Did you get any hospice support?
No.
He was never placed on hospice.
We did not. I don't remember whether or not you and I talked about that, but we never did hospice.
He never wanted that.
Never wanted
that. He still had that kind of stigma placed with hospice, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound like it would have been that helpful because he was fine right up until he got mm-hmm. the one final illness that yes. you didn't even know that was it.
Yes.
Because he had bounced back so many times. How do you think you're doing working through his loss?
I'm okay.
You're okay?
Yes. I do funny things. Like today I drove his truck. I just do things to remind myself every day.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
Does your family help you to work through things?
Oh, they're hilarious. You know, Dr. Rosemary. So sometimes Mia, the oldest one, Mia has his phone. This is not funny, but she'll like call us from my dad's phone. That's not funny because you get a phone that says, that is not cool. So you're sitting in a meeting or something, it's like, and this picture pops up. It's like, oh.
It kind of reminds me a little of apples and trees going on here.
Yes.
Sounds like something Lisa might do.
Yes, I'm sorry I didn't think of it first, but so yes, they're very helpful. And when we get sad, we tell each other we're sad. When we need to think about him, we'll grab his coat or his hat. I think we're going to do okay.
How long do you think it will take you to get over him?
I don't think you do. I don't think anyone gets over. I mean, you do, but you don't. That's grief counseling 101. I got to sign up for that class. I'll let you know. I don't know.
Do you think the caregiving experience that you had for those 10 years, do you think that enriched you?
Oh, my goodness. Dr. Rosemary, I learned about banking and money. I learned how to be a better cook. I mean, actually, I learned to be a really good cook. I learned just through your program because the...
Now, I didn't know we were teaching cooking.
Yeah. With Deborah Sapphire, the nutritionist.
That's right.
Yes, she taught us about just all the different ways to have food and not have salt, and what foods have natural salt, like celery and potassium. Remember the big potassium scare?
Yeah.
Just so many different things. We'd sit and eat bananas in our cereal. We'd have a banana for lunch. No. If our medicine has potassium, we don't add it. So many different things we learned that from just from your group, from the psychiatrist, from the social worker, the psychiatrist, I don't want to call names, but the psychiatrist, the social worker, the nutritionist, the pharmacist, Ms. Mont, I mean, so many, and they were always available. They were always helpful.
Do you think caregiving enriched you as a person?
Yes, absolutely.
Emotionally?
Yes. I am empathetic and I am sensitive, but I'm also very hard on some of my seniors that come into the library because they'll come in and they'll say, well, I'm not computer savvy. Or I said, but you have an $800 phone. Do you drive a Lexus? You have computers in your car. You have a computer in your microwave. You have a computer in that little hearing aid. So I try to bridge the technology that they work with every day to the mindset that they have that they're not connected to the world. So being a kid, and my dad would never, you know how he was, he'd do this. He would never touch a computer, but he was always interested. So in my everyday work, yes, I try to bridge the caregiving and what I do with a lot of the seniors that come through the branch that really need help, and I know that they need help.
I think that's kind of an interesting take. I've never heard anybody say that before, Lisa, that just the experience of taking care of your elderly father for all that time made you more in tune when he was gone, mm-hmm. and probably even while he was still alive, to be able to resonate more, to encourage the elderly to mm-hmm. do more. Yes. I mean, your father's generation was the greatest generation.
They really were. Yes, because to let me learn from him, he will tell you about the quarter and the dime. The quarter was for his hamburger, and the dime was for his Coca-Cola. And that's all that he had every day because he had to sell newspapers at 6 years old. And so just the whole, from there on, just the stories and what they had to go through was amazing.
And your father was career military.
Yes.
And when he retired, he didn't really retire, did he?
No, he didn't. He became a nurse.
Right.
And after right after, in 1970, he retired out of Lackland Air Force Base. We lived on Military Drive, and he went right into nursing. And I don't know, we were like, why is our dad walking around in these white clothes? And, you know, there weren't men nurses. And so I'd always say, oh, my dad's a doctor. But he was like, I'm a nurse. And he was very proud. He was very, very proud to be in that profession, and he picked it. He actually researched, and I remember him saying, I'm going to school. And when he'd drop us off, he'd go to school too, or we walked, or however he organized our time. But after that, he became the sheriff, or like a citizen sheriff.
So he had three careers.
Yeah, yes.
And when he had his surgical incident that required him to finally retire, then his interaction, his close personal interaction began with you. Why you, Lisa, not one of your sisters?
It could have been any one of us. We got the phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning that he was going into surgery. They called here in Las Vegas at 3 o'clock in the morning to say he was having first, like, 8 a.m. surgery, Louisiana time. So that gave that didn't give any of us any time to be organized and to get down there. I was the only one with the flexibility. I mean, everyone eventually did show up, and everyone did eventually did what they could, but I don't think I was picked or chosen or anything. I just answered the phone. And
It's just so typical when you talk to caregivers, you know, the road into caregiving is either like you, where it's just you get the phone call in the middle of the night and it changes your whole life. And you have to make a decision of how involved you're going to get. Sometimes it's a matter of things just slowly going downhill. Or maybe it's a wife watching her husband lose it, you know, and until you get to a point where you realize that you have to intervene. There's even some people who feel like they were caregivers all their lives. It's something they did as a kid. But you were in the group of people that was faced so dramatically with a change in your life.
So I don't mean to interrupt, but Dr. Rosemary, he was also married at the time, and his wife got sick and passed away the 5 months that I was there. So I didn't, at one point, they were both hospitalized on the same floor, but I didn't have any legal say-so, and she had a son as well, so it became just a situation where I had to make choices and do things, and none of us, myself, his wife, the son, none of us realized. We thought always, as we were going to remain hopeful, that this is going to change. They're going to both go home and take care of each other, and they're going to be fine. So my niece was the one, my family, they were really great. My niece sent the ticket so that I could actually go. They talked to me every day. They called me all the time. Just like they call me all the time now. Where are you at? What are you doing? We're going to put a tracker on your phone. But, yeah, everybody was really great. Still is really great.
Could you do it again, Lisa?
No. Dr. Rosemary, my mom is 90. And my sister in California, who's also a nurse, and Mr. Gibson, let's say publicly, he encouraged everyone to be a nurse. But she takes care of my mom now, and I can send things and do things, but I have to leave that role to her right now. I don't know if I would be a good caregiver. I don't know if I'm just at the, I don't know if I'm healed up enough to be her caregiver, and she deserves good care like everyone.
My question triggered something in you, though. Tell me what I did.
You know, can I just, I don't wanna, it's hard. It's just, my mom is like full of energy and life, and she dances and she sings, and she is just an amazing little ball of energy. And I have that for her, and of course my sisters, and we have that, but it's just, it's a lot to walk in from one caregiving situation. I can't imagine. I bet a lot of people have to do that over and over again. I can imagine that that would be really hard.
Do you think that if someone came to you and asked you if they should become a caregiver, what would you tell them?
I would ask them, how much support do you have? I would ask them, what is your mental capacity for giving of yourself? Is it okay to miss a hair appointment? Is it okay if you miss a nail appointment? Can you live without your nails and hair done? Are you willing to be told at the stoplight, go left instead of right? Why are you speeding? Take me to the strip. I mean, are you willing to be directed as an adult? You're already an adult. You've raised your kids. Are you willing to step back into that role that sometimes a parent will put you in?
See, that's another completely different perspective that I hadn't heard before.
Oh, it's hilarious.
You do then become directed by the person you're caring for, by the people that are giving you medical orders. I hadn't thought of that, you know, re-embracing the need to re-embrace that willingness to be regimented. Mm-hmm. Again.
Oh, yes. You have to step right into the boots and march.
So many caregivers have told me the main quality that's required is you must really love the person you're caring for.
That's absolutely. And even if you don't care for them, there has to be such a mutual respect. There has to be a respect. It's love and respect.
Did you ever feel that your father was taking advantage of you?
Oh my goodness, he would forget Mother's Day. He would forget my birthday. And I never knew if it was not towards you. I was like, it's not on purpose. You didn't say Happy Mother's Day. He would say, you're not my mother.
Ooh, I've heard that one before.
Right? Just oof. And then you walk away. You just go and sit on your bed and close the door for 5 minutes. You take time out.
Do you think you'll always be sympathetic to anyone who's a caregiver?
Yes, absolutely.
Just real quick, I wanted to ask you, do you think doing a little thing for a caregiver, like dropping off flowers or candy or even a card, do you think that's helpful at all?
That's everything. I hope that I've kept all of the cards. I hope that I've kept not all of them. A lot of my stuff is just like packed in a box, but yes. It's everything. Just to show love. Stop and give a hug. I have so many of my friends right now, Dr. Rosemary, and I have to cheat and tell you. I didn't say this before, but I bought your book, and I'm going to give it away to all of my friends that are caregivers and ask you, will you please sign their books? It's kind of cheating to put you on the spot like that, but your book is so amazing. It's going to help so many people because so many people are caring for parents and siblings, and especially post-COVID and not knowing what long-term COVID looks like and what it does, we have no idea.
Well, so there's only 53 million of you, so maybe we'll eventually learn something.
Thank you, doctor.